Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, and turning our attention now to ACL, anterior cruciate ligament injuries, and also posterior cruciate ligament injuries as well. We can talk about them both, preventing and treating them, with Dr. Bill Clancy, a professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He recently returned to Wisconsin after being gone for about 20 years and is the new chief of the Sports Medicine Division within the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation. It was a sad day when he left, I can tell you that. A lot of people were really sad to see him go because he's done so much. He's pioneered so many things. And he founded the Sports Medicine Program at UW-Madison in 1974. So it's great to have him with us today to talk about ACL injuries and certainly and how to prevent them. And hopefully you'll call in with your questions and comments as we move along. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And Dr. Clancy, welcome back.
It's great to be back.
It's great to have you back. You've been gone, what, 20... More than 20 years, huh? About 20 years.
21 years. But I've been back a lot. I have two daughters and four grandkids here. So I've been back all the time.
Well, you have had a chance to work with, well, you actually, your own techniques for repairing ACLs and PCLs are used all over the world, if I'm not mistaken.
We were fortunate that prior to my coming, when I finished my training at Columbia University in New York, my two-year draft obligation during the Vietnamese War was chief orthopedics and the head team physician for the Naval Academy. And there we saw tons and tons of ACL injuries. But at that time, we had really nothing we could do. There were things we were trying to do that everybody around the world was trying to do, but they really didn't work. And so when I was leaving the Naval Academy, actually, I took the job of the New York Giants in the NFL, and then the University of Wisconsin asked me would I be interested in coming out. And I really preferred taking care of college athletes and professional athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the University of Wisconsin is a phenomenal name, phenomenal athletic department. Since I was a kid, I always followed sports. I knew how good Wisconsin was. So I thought it was a phenomenal opportunity because there was really essentially no other university program in sports medicine. So I felt that I'd have the opportunity here to really investigate what we could do to take care of these injuries. And many advances in medicine come from a stepping stone, seeing what other people tried that didn't work and figure out how it would work. And that's what happened, that there was a procedure done in Sweden that people were trying to do in Sweden, and I happened to find out about it and look at it and tried it. And I knew the way they were doing it would never work, and so I figured out a way that I thought it could work. And then having the access to the primate centers, mm-hmm. we were able to do all of our studies on the rhesus monkeys mm-hmm. to reconstruct their ACL, do all the biomechanical testing, study the regeneration of the graft, studying how the vessels grow in and make it alive again. And so we were able to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that this procedure would work. We had the basic science to back it up. And it took time for people to accept it. Now it's, you know, the state of the art throughout the world. Virtually every orthopedic surgeon uses basically one form or other of our technique we developed here for both the ACL and the PCL.
That's great. The you know what? Some people are probably wondering, what exactly do the anterior cruciate ligament and the posterior cruciate ligament do in the body?
Well, the knee is a very complicated structure. It can go sideways, you know, from right to left.
Yeah.
It can go front to back, okay? And when you jump up in the air, the lower leg wants to separate from the upper leg. And so you have four ligaments that control the motion. And the center of the motion is the anterior cruciate. And so you have what we call abnormal. If you cut the anterior cruciate ligament, it's like driving a car with the wheel way out of alignment. And what's going to happen to the tread and the tire, the joint surface, you're going to wear it out. But secondly, though, is that the knee is unstable. If you tear your anterior cruciate in your right knee and you're playing sports and you plant on the right and turn to the left, the knee will, the lower leg will jump forward and then jump back and be very painful when knee give way, and you're eventually going to want to tear your menisci besides chewing up your knee joint. So you need it for two reasons. People obviously get it fixed so that they have good stability and they go back and play recreational sports or competitive sports. But that's really not the main reason why we fix them. We're trying to restore the knee as close to biomechanical stability as possible, so you have less wear and tear on your joint surface, and hopefully you also prevent tearing the meniscus. And so that we were able to show we can do both. I mean, a lot of times you sustained a lot of other injuries when you tear your ancient cruciate, and those injuries will pay the price way down the road, but we're trying to give you a better knee functionally and a better knee biomechanically than you have.
Well, we have some callers online to visit with you. We will invite you to call in if you have a question. The number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org. And Corey in Oshkosh has a comment or question. Hi, Corey. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Last July, I was playing softball, and I tore my knee up really bad. I had ACL, cadaver graft, a meniscus tear, and a bone fracture, or a little chip that they had to take out. And I was a little skeptical on the cadaver graft being, you know, like a dead person's body part going into me. And the recovery from it and the entry not having to harvest a tendon from my body, it was just phenomenal. I have really no problems right now, and I lack a little motion and some strength, but I'm thinking by July, which is about a year, which is pretty good for my age, I will be probably back to normal. And, you know, I thank you for all the doctors that put all your time and effort into making this procedure so smoothly, because it worked out really well for me.
Oh.
Well, let me make a comment that taking cadaver graft is very common in the United States. However, the failure rate of a cadaver graft is incredibly higher, much higher than your own tissue. And we don't know why. We know all the basic science studies have been done. Every one of them have shown clearly that at a year that a cadaver graft is only 50% or even less than 50% compared to one of your own tissues, be it your patella tendon, your hamstrings, or your quadriceps tendon. Now, will it regenerate back to, you know, it's going to be less strength than your normal ACL. Whereas if you take your own tissue, your actual strength is going to be 1.5 times as strong as the ACL you failed. In our experience at Alabama Sports Medicine, we were probably seeing more professional athletes than any other clinic in the world, that the highest failure rate we see is with cadaver grafts. And some are what we call irradiated, which somehow affects the mechanical structures of it. But even when it's not irradiated, that it takes longer. And that's not to say it won't work. It's just that, number one, we know it takes probably well over a year before you can go back and really load it hard. And a recreational athlete or somebody who's sedentary, it probably makes no difference whatsoever.
But for a professional athlete, it would make a...
Well, a high school athlete.
Yeah.
High school athlete, you know, they need to get back, at, you know, 6 months with a normal, you know, their own tissue. But an allograft is nowhere as strong while it's regenerating, and you're going to risk, you know, tearing that out. Somebody who's, you know, occasionally playing softball, probably not going to make a much difference.
Oh. Well, Corey, I'm glad things are working out for you. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. And I want to turn to Susanna in Duluth, Minnesota next. Hi, Susanna.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I tore my ACL a couple of years ago, and I don't have health insurance. And I'm wondering, I've kind of looked into medical tourism, and I'm wondering what you thought about that, if that's a viable option, if the procedures are the same, and if it's safe.
Say that again, medical tourism? I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Like going over to maybe India and having my ACL reconstructed.
Oh, okay.
If you find the right physician who's got a lot of experience doing it, you know, I mean, the technique is worldwide. Well-trained surgeons who know how to do it, you know, chances are you're going to get it's the same result if you use your own tissue, the same result as you would perhaps having it done in the States. Again, it comes down to it's a technical procedure. And so, therefore, you have to have someone who is at the cutting edge who knows exactly where to put it. And if they know that, you should do well.
Okay. But so if you were going to have it done on you, you'd want to have somebody who'd had done it more than once, Dr. Clancy.
Yes, because we've fallen, when we developed the procedure in 1975, from 75 to the very early 90s, everybody in the world did it correctly. Then some people felt, well, we can do it easier by doing it, putting the tunnels in a little different spot, okay?
Oh.
And now everybody realizes that was the wrong spot, higher failure rate, et cetera. So now now the big guns throughout the world now are going back and putting it what we call anatomically.
Yeah.
We've been going over the last couple of years about should you use a double bundle or one graft or two grafts. But there was a trend to everybody start trying to do double bundle, but now the trend is that weighing it biomechanically and the way the graft hypertrophies, you don't need two tunnels.
All right. Susanna, thanks. Steve in Chicago, on to you. Hi, Steve.
Doctor, very brief history. I got run over by a car crossing the street in 1991 and blew up medial collateral meniscus, both cruciates. And there was the surgeon who repaired them, basically strapped them back together. He drilled some holes in the tibial platform and mattress stitched them back together. And I have to say that it worked fairly well. I mean, I'm now 63 and I'm still able to run, but there is loss of motion. You know, it seemed to have shortened up the cruciates some. And I'm wondering because it's such an inelastic tissue, if there's any way really to get any of that motion back. I mean, it's close, but I notice it.
Well, first of all, if they drill tunnels, okay, then they put in grafts. Okay, number two is that those ligaments are not inelastic. They're actually very elastic. Mm. You know, they have probably a 15% elasticity change in length. Generally, when you lose motion, it's not the cruciates. It's the capsule, the casing around your joint gets too scarred. And so you lose the elasticity of the casing. For example, when people develop significant arthritis, now, they used to be able to bend their knee to 140 degrees. Now they can bend it only to 85 to 80. They can't get it to full extension. That's because the casing has scarred.
Mm.
And that's probably, and when you had it basically a dislocated knee, that's the worst thing you can have, tearing both cruciate ligaments and your medial ligament. The body reacts by laying down a tremendous amount of scar. And so that's probably your problem, not your ligaments.
Oh, there it is. Dr. William Clancy, our guest, and he'll be with us right up until 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking today with Dr. William Clancy, professor in the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, recently returned to Wisconsin after being gone for about 20 years and is the new chair of the Sports Medicine Division within the Department of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation. He actually started that sports medicine division when he was first here, so it's great to have him back. Certainly, you can join in with your questions and comments as we move along, too, at 800-642-1234, email talk@wpr.org. And Dr. Clancy, tell us a little about the sports medicine division that you're heading up now.
Well, yeah, most people don't really understand what sports medicine is. Sports medicine actually involves two groups. Mm-hmm. One, you have the sports scientist who's working on exercise physiology, on performance, and so looking at all the scientific aspects. Then you have the medical aspects of sports medicine, in which you have two subgroups. You have the medical team physicians, the medical aspects of sports, and you have the musculoskeletal aspects of sports, which is orthopedics.
Okay.
And so here at the university, we've really gotten together, okay, certainly the whole medical aspects. We have five primary care board-certified sports medicine physicians who are fantastic. With Greg Landry and Dave Bernhardt and Kathy, having been matured, know the stuff, and two really really young superstars in John Wilson and Allison Brooks. Then from the orthopedic point of view, we have two internationally recognized doctors and Dr. Ben Graff and Dr. Jim Keen. And then we have Tammy Schiappello, who we stole away from. She was head of sports medicine at Syracuse, and she was a resident here at Wisconsin. She did her residency here, and Tom Zdebelk, the chairman, stole her away. She's done fabulous research, and she's just a fantastic person. And then Jeff Baer, who's our youngest, who takes care of football, he is going to be an out-and-out superstar. This guy is fantastic. So I'm blessed to have a crew like this that are unbelievable. It just gives me great enthusiasm just to watch them and to be part of it.
Oh, sounds great. Bill in Sun Prairie has a comment or question for you. Bill, hello. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for the program. I'd like to just tell you my story and get some advice. I'm 68 years old, and I've been doing kind of a light jogger since 1972. I get out and run a couple of miles, and here a few years back, I had some difficulty with my left knee. Kind of swelled up and started to hurt, so I went in and ended up with a cleanup job on my meniscus, and it really, really helped. Now the pain is starting to come back a little, and I'm just wondering, number one, what to do next. Number two, can I keep jogging? And number three, why is it that my right knee is fine? They're both the same age.
Well, that meniscus actually is sort of wedge-shaped, and the joint surface of your thigh bone is curved, so that wedge actually increases the weight-bearing area of your knee joint surface. Mm-hmm. So you have less pressure per square inch. And so when you tear the meniscus and lose it, it's like buying a 2011 car with a 1940 tire. And your joint surface, that white on the end of a chicken bone, is exactly like a tire. If you scuff your skin, the skin grows back. The joint surfaces we have, not only do they not grow back, they're actually wearing out every day. How fast you wear out your joint surface of your knee and your hip is basically dependent on your mother and father. Do they give you the jeans for a $300 Goodyear, okay, a $100 Firestone, or a $50 Cooper? Your problem is now that you're getting excessive wear in your knee because you don't have the meniscus. When you tear the meniscus, it's no longer functioning, whether you leave it in or take it out. You take it out because it's going to move around and speed up the wear, so you're trying to slow it down. Now, your orthopedic surgeon can take what we call weight-bearing Rosenberg x-rays to see how much narrowing you have on that side. Usually the other side of the knee is good, so you actually can put an orthotic in your shoe that has a lift on one side that's going to shift your weight-bearing to the other side. It's like rotating your tires when you go in and get your oil changed. And that's the first thing I would do. And you're not a racer, so I think it's important to try to get back to, keeping cardiovascular conditioning and jogging. And you might be able to do that if your wear and tear isn't so bad and you can shift your weight bearing with an orthotic. But that's what I would do, is I'd see somebody who's really well-versed in sports medicine and what you want to do, and also knows, how to to evaluate your knees from a standing knee flex position x-ray.
All right. There you go. Good luck, Bill. Thank you for calling. Lisa in Waldo, Wisconsin, on to you now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I injured my knee in 1998 playing softball, and I'm a physical therapist assistant by trade, and I did something to my knee. However, I never followed up with any care or diagnosis or anything, but based on what I know about the ACL, I think that's what I did. I was running forward, planted my right foot, and the knee kept going, and I went down. And since then, my knee is unstable, painful off and on, And I do notice, like you said earlier in the show, that if I am, I'm not an athlete, but I do try to be active. But if I'm trying to do basketball, volleyball, or whatever, and I'm trying to, if I plant that foot and change direction, it will give out, and it is very painful. I have had my internal medicine doctor just x-ray it. There is arthritis in the knee. She did the drawer test. I don't know if that's even applicable nowadays, but it was when I was in school. But it's not, it doesn't move that much as far as the tibia on the femur.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering, would you suggest that I do further diagnosis, or if it doesn't, you know, what is my future outcome going to be if I don't really look at it?
Yeah, okay. Carefully.
First of all, you wouldn't want to come to me to check your heart. Okay. No, I know how to listen to a heart, but I'm not the expert. First of all, you want to see somebody who's a knee expert. Obviously, you have a knee problem. That a draw test is passe. That draw test is very unreliable. It's the Lachman's test that's absolutely the critical thing, and the pivot shift test, which any accomplished primary care sports medicine physician or orthopedic surgeon would know how to do. And if you continue to have episodes of instability, you know, obviously you're going to go, you're chewing up your knee if you haven't already torn your meniscus. And so that, and to say you're not an athlete is ludicrous. If you're playing recreational sports, you know, on a routine basis, you're an athlete, okay? And so that, and you're not getting it fixed to be an athlete. You're trying to get and preserve your knee as long as possible. So you want to have a stable knee that you can do anything anytime you want, and not be afraid of it, and also that, you know, to help slow down any arthritic process. Second of all, I think it really takes a good radiologist or orthopedic surgeon to tell you, you know, how much arthritis you have. You probably didn't get a weight bearing flexion view. So these are the things that somebody, you know, who's, you know, that's their field.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't go to a proctologist to have your knee examined. So,
yeah. Same thing. Okay. Good luck, Lisa. You've got your marching orders. Thanks a lot for calling. And you are an athlete if you're playing. Leslie in Preston, Minnesota, it's on to you. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Larry. First of all, I have a comment for you. I've been listening to your show since 91, and absolutely, you make my days. So
oh,
I hope
you
never
you.
Retire.
Thank
I
you.
I have to retire then because I would be bored stiff in my car. But I just have a quick question. My daughter is 28, and she had ACL surgery when she was 18. And she kind of was like an overachiever at her rehab, and she just pushed herself to the limit to where it really hurt and when she was doing what she thought was right. And now since then I've heard that that's really wrong to do it that way. But now she's thinking about, four kids later, she's thinking about running a half marathon that she's just starting training now and is going to run it in a month. And I'm just wondering his opinion on that. From like, if it was his daughter, what would he think about that?
Well, I'd have no problem with it. I mean, the whole object is trying to give you a need to do what you wanted to do. And if she's got a good result, and and she's done the proper training. I mean, if I don't know how long ago she started training, but if she just started training recently and trying to run a half marathon, you know, she's pushing it. And, you know, I'm not too much worried about her knee is, you know, getting a stress fracture or getting chronic tendonitis or overloading her kneecap. But if she does the proper training, I have no problem with that. Both my daughters, you know, they have a million injuries, and they play soccer for the University of Virginia, and they both have had stress fractures of their femur, you know, doing marathons. But they've done a number of marathons and got over their problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. There you
Thank
go. You mentioned your daughters, and I know that women seem to have more ACL kinds of issues than men and girls than boys.
That is the biggest problem we're facing right now, in that females have a 5-time higher incidence of tearing their ACLs in volleyball, basketball, and soccer.
Mm.
And there's many thoughts on this. I have my own thought. I think it's due to the female anatomy. They have a lot of girls, you know, they have what we call femoral inversion. When they were kids, they would toe in a little bit. That's their hip has a little more motion, a little more laxity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only trait that most great athletes have. There's a gentleman associated with the University of Wisconsin who's a typical example of that. You know, they're faster, better agile athletes, and his name is Crazy Legs Hirsch.
Yeah.
And that's because, you know, he has femoral aversion. But it puts you at risk in certain activities. And so that's one of the main goals we're looking at right now. My research is in to see if this is probably the cause, because it's a 5-time higher incidence of femoral aversion in females than males. And if it is, I think we have a way preventatively to decrease these injuries with an orthotic and medial heel wedge in their shoe to decrease the chances of too much motion.
Oh, that, so the research is, your research is going on right now about that.
This is what we're getting organized for, because I think this is a horrendous problem. And no one as yet has been able to solve it, and we're trying to prevent them.
Well, I hope you'll come back when we... You're not leaving yet, but I hope you'll come back with the results of that one. That's for sure. Because that would be spectacular if that could... I have a daughter who plays basketball, so I'm alert to that sort of thing. Raymond in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Raymond.
Well, hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. Got a quick question for the doctor. My father-in-law lives with us, and last summer he had a fall and tore his ACL. And his orthopod kind of discouraged him from having a repair operation. And he has decided not to have the repair operation. I'm just wondering, he's 93, but he was physically active. He was walking about a little more than a mile a day before he had the injury. He can still walk with a walker, but it's not optimal. So we're just wondering what to do.
Well, first of all, you don't need an ACL to walk, nor do you need an ACL to run. Mm-hmm. And so I'd be looking at, was this this fall, was it the straw that broke the camel's back? In other words, more things went on. Did he tear his meniscus? Was he on the verge of becoming symptomatic with arthritis? Then in general, in a sedentary type of person, and you can't put an age on it. You know, I've done 70-year-olds who are very active and wanted to get back skiing in the worst way and fix their knees. Now, you know, 93, to subject them to a pretty significant operation and then a high-demand rehabilitation, and you worry about them even getting enough motion back, you know, to do the walking. Yeah. And I think the orthopedic surgeon was practicing what everybody in the world would practice. I would look into why he should be able to walk. Believe me, that the ACL should have nothing to do with his ability to walk whatsoever or to run.
So you should be taking a closer look.
Yeah, for something else.
Yep.
That's interesting, because he can't walk without the walker at all, because that left knee gives out on him, you know, maybe every 4 or 5 steps.
It may be. It's not... The ACL by itself is not going to cause that. He may have a combined injury where he tore the medial side of his knee and it's healed with laxity, or he may have knocked off a piece of his joint surface where he's got now exposed bone, which is arthritis, which is painful when he walks, and they give way because of pain. All of a sudden, it's like getting the dentist when he takes that air gun and shoots it into a cavity. All of a sudden, damn, yeah, it hurts. So I would definitely be looking at something else.
There you go. Uh-oh.
That's good advice. Well, he walks quite a bit with his walker, but like I said, if he tries to walk without it, yeah, if he bends the knee and he just even a little bit, then it gives out on him.
Yeah. So have
an orthopedic surgeon take a good look at him.
Yeah. There you go. Thanks, thanks very much, Ray, for calling. Earl in Chautauqua, we're on to you now. Hi, Earl.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Well, I had my son's 15, and August 15th, he tore his ACL playing football. And I have two questions, being kind of a overbearing parent. Number one is he wants to do is play baseball. And he does have a brace, and he pitches. I know he can't catch. So that's the first question, because I just heard a little while ago a gentleman wanting playing baseball, and I was wondering, it's been the 6-month point. The other question I have, he wants to do some 3-on-3 tournaments, basketball this summer. And I'm wondering if that is a wise thing also.
Well, the ACL is healed at 6 months. I mean, it's reached, at 6 months, the strength of the graft is equal to the normal ACL. Actually, what happens is over the next 3 months, between 6 and 9 months, the graft increases the strength to be almost 1.5 times as strong as the ACL he tore. But in general, how fast they go back is really dependent on their muscle strength.
Okay.
When they're within 90%. Now I don't use a brace on anybody post surgery. I don't think the brace, personally, and this is a subject of controversy throughout the world, I don't think the braces do anything except slow you down.
Okay.
It makes you brace conscious, which I think has the potential to increase risk of tearing the ACL on the other knee. And that if somebody wants to wear it, that's fine. But my patients seldom ever wear a brace after 6 months when they go back to sports.
So, doctor, is not a problem then if he slides into base or anything?
No, I mean...
Okay, because they use tissue from the hamstring.
The hamstrings is a great graft. I mean, they're probably, in a hyperelastic female, the hamstrings are not the ideal choice. But he should do very well. Nobody can guarantee anything. But I'll tell you, the actual failure rate of a well-placed, your own graft tissue, the failure rate's about 3%.
Oh, okay. I know I probably, he had his surgery done at Oakleaf in Eau Claire.
By Dr. Drobert?
Dr. Berg.
Okay. But
which I feel, we have total confidence in.
That group there is superb. I mean, you were in great hands. He should do very, very well.
Okay. So the brace, even with pitching, he doesn't really need his brace, you're telling me?
If I took care of him, I wouldn't have him wear the brace. You can talk to your physician and see if he really needs a brace.
Okay, sir.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Andy in Mount Horeb, on to you. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Dr. Clancy. I've got just a brief history. I tore my ACL back in 1991, and I had a torn meniscus with it. I decided to hold off on an ACL repair, and as years progressed, after about 16 years, I really ran into a lot more difficulty with going down hills and everything else. I subsequently had an ACL repaired, and I had retorn meniscus as well. So I had that done 4 years ago, and the rehab associated with that was fairly difficult. But my question is, it's twofold. One, I've been taking glucosamine on a daily basis, and I take, I believe each tablet's 1,200 milligrams.
Just glucosamine or chondroitin as well?
Yes, both.
Both? Okay.
Correct. And that has really helped with kind of lubricating my knee to get a better range of motion. But I also do have arthritis in my knee. So my other question, too, is in future years, can I expect to have more and more problems with my knee where I may be looking at, resurfacing or knee replacement? I'm 46 now. I still play adult hockey, so I'm fairly active, and I want to maintain that. But I'm just not sure in future years. What can I expect from my knee, and is it going to be kind of a liability?
Well, I mean, the problem is you went so long without an ACL, and you wound up getting some degenerative changes. You tore your meniscus, which, they had to take out, which decreases, which decreases the amount of increases the pressure, contact pressures across your knee.
Right.
And that, that you're... The likelihood, yes, you're going to go on and progress. How fast? No one knows. Two, you're taking chondroitin sulfate glucosamine. Actually, that's not for lubrication. It actually strengthens the joint surface that you have present, to try to make it, stronger and last longer. So that's a very good idea.
So it's a good idea to continue on.
Right. Second of all, playing hockey, the loads on your knee are much less than running, cutting, playing basketball. And by being that active, which isn't phenomenally active, but, active enough, I mean, I don't think it's going to make any difference into the progress of how your knee is going to do, how fast you might go downhill, how slow you might go downhill. I remember an old Doris Day song, whatever will be, will be. And so I just, you can't change it. Just stay healthy. Keep up your conditioning. Keep up your strength and, the strength of your quad muscles and have fun.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I appreciate your help. Thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. I got an email from Michael in South Milwaukee. He's a professional outdoor guide and outfitter. And so he does a lot of hiking and tracking. And several years ago, he suffered an ACL injury. He went through two reconstruction surgeries, hours of physical therapy, still have the aches and pains. Many different options presented to me as how I can help lessen the pain, but not many of them have actually worked. How can I manage pain as well as improve my flexibility and stamina so I can keep going on the trails?
Well, first of all, you shouldn't have any pain unless there's something cooking, okay? You know, you have to know what kind of joint surface injury you had. Did you have a meniscectomy? Have you formed a lot of what we call capsular scar tissue or extracapsular scar tissue? That, again, all of these things have, you know, are not going to affect that much getting back your strength, okay? Your strength is something, and your endurance. You can, that's all should be able to be developed on weight training, biking. You can do, you know, biking has far less knee joint contact pressures that, and, you know, it's not going to build up your strength as much as your endurance. What you need to find out is where's the pain coming from?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the critical thing. Pain can come from something minimal, such as, you know, by minimal, like a little inflammation around a superficial skin nerve. Okay, believe it or not, it can be, you know, really, really a horrendous problem when it's next to nothing. So you need to get evaluated.
Dr. Clancy, this has been great. Thank you so much. Will you come back and be with us again?
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Dr. William Clancy, professor of the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have him along. And thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.